Hello everyone, welcome back to the Greenwood and Morland show here on Newcastle Fans TV. Another week, another podcast, and another former Newcastle United player, Sam Mulner, is the former Republic of Ireland fullback, Stephen Carr, who was signed by the late Sir Boy Robson. One of his last signings, as you mentioned in the podcast.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, really good fun this was. Stephen Carr living the high life as he is now, and fair play to him. Good crack, wasn't he?
He was very good crack. I really thoroughly enjoyed this interview. Very funny. Typical Irishman, really, isn't he? And he was one of Sir Boy Robson's last ever signings before he was sacked in September 2004. Just the one goal for Newcastle, over 100 appearances in the black and white of Newcastle. But
you say that like it's disappointing, but he's not a striker. He was a right back, and like
I thought you'd be disappointed about the 107 appearances.
No. you were saying before I rudely interrupted, what a goal it was! It was an absolute screamer. He had that in his locker, but as we say in the pod, that maybe we didn't see enough of that. But he was still just. When I say to a few mates of mine that we've got Stephen Carr coming on the show, and it's like, oh, solid, steady, consistent, just all-round defender, real, real decent player. So that's what he was, I think.
Yeah, fantastic career. Obviously, 12 years at Tottenham, came to Newcastle for four seasons, and then was semi-retired for half a year, nearly a year, and then moved to Birmingham City and obviously won the League Cup in 2011. With Obafemi Martin scoring the winner at Wembley. He gets a mention later on in the podcast. But it's a really interesting one because it's an era that we haven't really gone into too much, Sam, because obviously we've had a few of the entertainers on. We've had one or two people from the Sir Boy Robson era, 01, 02, 02, 03, that sort of era. But this is an era that a lot of Newcastle fans don't look back with great fondness. But if they delved a little bit deeper into this, we actually weren't a million miles away from cup finals and, you know, potential trophies.
We weren't far off at all. Yeah, really close. I mean, I suppose the closest we've come from this era is kind of Solano when he obviously re-signed. But yeah, it's still good to cover these eras as well that aren't as popular with the media. And like you said, there were still plenty of highlights in there. There were still some classic games in there, some real classic games. It was good. As you did, I thoroughly enjoyed this one. He's got a clothing line as well, which is when you first hear it, you think that's just mental. But it's good. It's good. It's not horrendous. it's good. So the link's in the description if you want to take a look at one of one. It's good. Fair play to him.
Yeah, it's like he says it's not Jack Grealish type of clothes, but it's probably for a different type of market. You know, just like casual clothing ranges, and again like gym wear as well. And I think everyone's a lot more comfortable when they wear clothes like that. Like I live off, like, when I'm not at work, I live on like tracksuits and hoodies, and like it's comfortable. So,
and yeah, that's what I'm like now. I'm like married with kids. My life's essentially over. So yeah, comfy clothes is what it's all about now.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is a podcast that will get a lot of discussion going in the comments, and if you can leave us some reviews as well and tell us what you thought of it, that'd be fantastic. 5-star reviews would be even better, as Sam likes to mention every now and then.
Yeah,
but you know, we do greatly appreciate all the feedback that we do get, Sam, don't we?
Oh god, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it makes the not pressure, because pressure is a privilege, but to keep churning out and be consistent and doing these podcasts once a week for over a year now, it does make it worthwhile.
It does make it worthwhile, and I think we should get this podcast up and running. So this is the Greenwood and Mulner show with the former Newcastle United fullback, Stephen Carr. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Newcastle Fans TV. This is a Greenwood and Mulner show with a fantastic guest. It is the former Newcastle and Republic of Ireland fullback, Stephen Carr. Stephen, welcome to the Greenwood and Mulner show.
Cheers. Great to meet you guys. Looking forward to it.
Stephen, Spain, sunny Spain, living in sunny Spain instead of the northeast or the Birmingham area. I can't believe you're missing all this fantastic weather and just England in general.
No, I'm very lucky because I had the opportunity, obviously, when I retire to move here with my family. I thought it'd be something different. As you say, the weather makes a big difference to your lifestyle. I have business interests here, so it's the perfect little place to come to. Easy access back and forth if you want to. So, yeah, it's certainly something different.
Not jealous at all. But, I mean, we get told that these footballers nowadays, they all want to live and play in London, which, of course, you were down there before moving to Newcastle. Did that make the move up to the northeast a tricky decision?
No, not for me, to be honest. For me, I was in London for 12 years. It's just about football. I never thought of an area. I thought of where I could go, where I could do well and try win things. So I do agree. Yeah, I think it happens with a lot of foreign players as well. They come, London seems to be the scene. They always want to go to the lifestyle for the family. It's different up north or Midlands. But for me, I've lived London, northeast, Midlands. It makes no difference to me, to be really honest. It's about playing football.
When the decision came, Stephen, to move to Newcastle, did the likes of Shea give you a little nudge and go, come on, it's lovely up in the northeast. You'd love it up here.
Yeah, they all lied. No. Obviously I spoke to Shea and all, but I'm quite single-minded. I know about Newcastle, you know what I mean? I know about the fan base. I know about the players they had, how close they had gone to winning the title. They were a club that were trying to always be competing in the Champions League, trying to win the league, and they were investing in it at that period of time. So for me, you make the decision on your own, what you think at that moment is good for you. I thought Newcastle was perfect for me. I loved the players they had, Bobby Robson as a manager. So it was very exciting for me to go up there, something different, a new challenge. As you say, when you're at a club from young, it's easy to stay there. I was quite loyal to them 12 years. I just found it was a good opportunity for me going to Newcastle.
I mean, you would have been, because obviously it didn't work out with Bobby that season, you would have been one of his final signings for Newcastle United. What was it like working with him in that kind of short space of time?
Well, here, at the end of the day, like, no one can speak high enough of what Bobby's done in the game. And even to the end, he was still involved. For me, I loved him. You know what I mean? He gave me freedom. He gave me a lot of freedom to attack. He liked how I played. And I just seen the desire of someone who wants to be a winner and always has been a winner in his career. So for the brief spell, because it was quite brief, I think he got sacked in September, I think.
Yeah.
We played Sunderland, it wasn't long after that. So it was very disappointing for me because he was part of the attraction of going to Newcastle. That was like the final thing. So to not be able to work with him long enough was a bit of a miss for me. But as football, it changes very quick. Like you go to the club for different reasons, but that's, you're there to play for the football club, regardless of who the manager is. And that's the way I view it. And anyway, but yeah, it was a pity I didn't get long enough with him.
You look at that team and you look at some of the players that you played with, Stephen, likes of your Alan Shearer, Patrick Kluivert just came in as well. And he had just obviously been playing for Barcelona. And you're thinking, wow, I'm joining a couple of players as an example to be playing alongside with them every single week. Did, no disrespect at Tottenham at that time, but you just felt that the levels had just gone higher automatically when you came to Newcastle?
Yeah, at that period of time, I thought Newcastle were attracting these massive players. Like, and Newcastle they've had some great teams and a lot of foreign players in and all. They've had some great teams over the years, which why people still to this day probably don't understand how they've not won anything, because they have had some great teams with good managers. So at that period of time, I thought, yeah, they were doing more to try and go forward as a club. Tottenham, I'd been there for a long time. I didn't see they were investing a hell of a lot to move forward into the Champions League, what have you. And I played with some great players at Tottenham as well. So it just, for me, it was a time I needed a change. And that's when Newcastle popped up. I was buzzing to go.
How times have changed now. It's the other way around now. Tottenham are spending the money and we're not. But you obviously came into that dressing room with like that team that had been together for a couple of 3 years and playing in the Champions League and then in Europe in the UEFA Cup. What was that like? Did you see the kind of switch in kind of a dressing room dynamic when Graeme Souness came in?
I don't know. I think Graeme was under quite a bit of pressure when he was in, and anyway, as you say, especially with Bobby leaving, who's been like part of the furniture there, it's quite difficult as a manager coming into that. I think you've seen it in numerous other clubs, the Wengers, Ferguson leaving, they've struggled like getting going again, and most Arsenal. So it is very difficult. I think it's difficult for managers to come in. The fans idolise Bobby. He's a big figure up there. So to take his place, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. But we still had great players, as you say, a great team, a great dressing room, good camaraderie. But yeah, it just seemed to falter from there a little bit.
For the first couple of games under Graeme's tenure at Newcastle, you're playing regularly, just throughout the whole season, you're playing regularly. And you got that fantastic goal down the south coast against Southampton. One touch, right in the bottom corner. What were you thinking at one point?
Just hit it. The thing is, for that's what you enjoyed doing, trying to do that. Like, obviously, I didn't score enough goals, as in, because I found myself, I rated myself as an attacking fullback at that time. Mm-hmm. I didn't get enough goals and get enough assists for it. Probably lacked the quality at times. But that was a great moment for me. It was the only goal, as I say. It was a good group of lads. JJ there, Kieran Dyer, Shearer, some great players, Shea. It was an amazing moment. Unfortunately, the amazing moments weren't, there wasn't many of them. So it wasn't to be repeated again. It was the only goal I scored. And I say then I picked up quite a few injuries.
I mean, considering it is the only goal you scored for Newcastle, it wasn't a bad one, was it? It was actually a thunderbass of a strike. I remember you hitting kind of like a similar one for Spurs back in the day when you had the kind of jet black slicked back hair and everything. So it's something, as you say, that you were kind of used to doing and getting forward and trying to score.
Yeah, something I tried doing. Under managers, I was encouraged to do it. The managers I'd played under, Tottenham and all, very much encouraged, obviously, to defend, but encouraged to be getting forward, trying to score goals and assists. I scored a couple for Tottenham. As I say, it's still not really enough looking back on it for the amount of times I had been going forward. So maybe I just lacked that bit of quality to be consistently doing it.
You talked earlier, Stephen, about how Sir Bobby wanted you just to express yourself and go further forward. Did Graeme continue that, or did he want you to be a little bit more disciplined at the back? Or what did he want from you?
No, Graeme was still the same, to be fair. He wasn't like holding me back, right? No. He wanted me to attack as well. Not too dissimilar, to be honest. Obviously, they're very similar, to be fair. They still want a solid defence. Like, I mean, you don't concede goals, you don't lose games, and that's your job as a defender. But I still had the freedom to go forward, no attack. There was never once was I told I couldn't do that. He still had that philosophy of attacking football. Whether it came across like that or not, I don't know. But that was his philosophy, Graeme. I still have freedom to go forward.
I mean, I can't, on the other wing, you had poor Olivier Bernard with Laurent Robert in front of him, who would never get back. And I mean, in front of you, would it have been Solano or Genus? How was playing alongside them?
I always believe as a fullback, I think you're as good as the person that's in front of you. Because as you just said there, if you have a winger who doesn't like to help out, that makes your job very difficult going forward because you get isolated. So I've been very, very lucky. I played with some very good wingers in front of me, Darren Anderson, Real Fox, who was at Newcastle, and they all worked hard. And you had that togetherness. Seb Larson works hard. James Milner works hard. Nobby works hard. It's not his game, Nobby, but he'll still do a shift with you because his game is... He's got an amazing right foot, amazing technique, but he'd still put a shift in. So I think I played with Ginola, and like you had to accept like Robert, Ginola will win the game for you, but do not expect him to be going the other way. And so you had to play that as a defender. But it does make a difference when you have the winger that works really hard for you. It makes your job a lot easier.
Some of those wingers you just mentioned there, like Ginola, Ruud Fox, and Darren Anderton, and then you've got likes of James Miller. That's just an absolutely fantastic wingers that you've been, like I say, blessed to play with, I suppose. But you look at that season in particular, Steve, in 2004-05. Newcastle, like a lot of Newcastle fans say that Graham Souness here wasn't the best, but UEFA Cup quarter finalists, FA Cup semi finalists. There were some memorable victories throughout that season as well. I can think of the Manchester City game at home at St. James's, yeah, that 4-3 win as well. You know, there was some moments where you go, actually, if Newcastle was a little bit fortunate, you never know, could it have been an FA Cup final or your UEFA Cup final? You never know after that.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is football. It's very, as you say, you don't think of that. You only think of the negatives. And like there was some positives. I think the quarterfinal at Sporting Lisbon away, I think we gave away a bit. From what I remember, Kieran Dyer, who was a big threat for us with his pace, but I think he done his hamstring in it again. I think he got injured again. Yeah. And as you say, it's these moments. I think if Kieran had stayed fit and was in that game, we would have won it. And then you go to a semi-final where you had a bit depleted squad of injuries that we had to play on the Sunday. I think it was the Thursday, Sunday with the travel. So as you say, that week defines a lot. You get that little bit of luck at times and you're looking at a completely different thing and the outlook on Graham, because at the end of the day, you said quarterfinals, semi-finals, but it means nothing in the end. At the end of the day, you don't win anything, you're not got to the final. So the most important thing is to win things. People don't look back at who lost, it's somebody who win.
That game in Lisbon, I remember it like it was yesterday, because we'd gone 1-0 up, hadn't we, in Lisbon, and then as you say, Kieran Dyer went off injured.
He was causing all sorts of problems. I think that's what you see moments. I remember it, and if he hadn't have been injured, then I do believe we would have won the game, because the problems, he couldn't cope with them. He just couldn't cope with his pace, and he had the freedom on the ground to just, not free roll, but Sam, because of his pace, he'd cause havoc, and the foreigners didn't like running after him. It's simple; they weren't used to it.
I mean, I think it was Shola that came on for him, and no disrespect to Shola, but he hasn't quite got the legs that Kieran Dyer had.
No, he's a completely different player. He's a figurehead up there, Shola. I mean, cause problems, you get a lot of bits off him, but he's not going to run them as much as once he gets going. That's not his strength. It's like Kieran's not a strength to hold the ball up, but Kieran's strength is running off the likes of Shola and Miomi, them type players, and getting bits off them and slotting them in. But yeah, so it just, we lost the momentum in the game with that, I think. And I think they got a bit of a lift from it, because I think they were quite relieved he had to go off.
Yeah.
I think that's quite an important point, though, because, you know, the likes of your Kieran Dyers, you know, can make the difference. Your big name players can make that difference, can get you from one round to the next round. And I think that's probably what cost Newcastle in the end, just those slightly unfortunate errors. But
Graham shouldn't have loaned out Bellamy to Celtic, then we would have had some pace off the bench.
I think there's a couple of stories about that, Sam, because I think there might have been a slight fallout halfway through. I can vividly remember a game against Arsenal where there was an interview, but What was Craig Bellamy like, actually, Stephen? Was he that difficult to play with, or was he a fantastic player? Or what would you say about
Craig?
Him?
Craig Bellamy's a pain in the arse, but for me, he's a winner. That's one thing. He was a winner. He worked hard in training. He always tried to better himself, and he's a very good player on the pitch. And as you say, in a big threat, a massive threat against anybody. So, no, Craig, I got him very well with Craig. No problems with Bellas. Like, no. As I said, he was very professional. Would he annoy people at times? Of course he would. But come across that. It doesn't matter. Once these players do it on the pitch, it makes no difference. You just ignore them. So, he's a little pain. I gave you a say. He can be a little pain. But he's a very, very good player. He's a very good player and a very good pro. And as you say, like, players like him, you have that in the team, and it makes a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, whilst we're speaking on players that that have had fallouts, I mean, that fallout between Graham and Craig Bellamy wasn't even the biggest fallout of that season. We all know what I'm referring to. I mean, you were the first man in there to break up Dyer and Bowyer, Stephen. Could you believe what your eyes were seeing?
No, but I don't think anybody could, because I remember looking at it when they were coming together. Because as you say, I'm pulled back, so I'm straight ahead. They were straight ahead of me. And it was one of them moments where you think, is it actually happening, what you're seeing? And then it's that split second you run and think. It's very hard to quantify that in your head, because I've never been involved in that, where the two teams, yeah, you've had scuffles with other players and it gets edgy and then you get sent off. Big difference. But to have that in your own team, it's very strange, like, very one-off. So, yeah, it was a very, very strange game. And then Tails gets sent off on the line with his acrobatics.
Shoulder.
And then we're down to 8 men, and you're thinking, just, we need to get in the dressing room. Like, this game is done. Like, but it was a very, very strange game, most strange game I've ever been involved in.
Did the rest of the squad see the press conference afterwards when the tea lady interrupted?
No, I did. I don't think I seen it. Did she?
You've never seen that? So,
that I can remember.
Right, I'll email you the video clip. But the thing so Graham, soon as I had the press conference with one of them either side, like naughty school children.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That's right.
Yeah. So the tea lady, I think her name was Kath, was it, Johnny?
Kath Cassidy. Yeah, Kath Cassidy. Yes.
So she comes in whilst Graham's in full flow and then just starts making a cup of tea right in front of him. And then, I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. But I could imagine if the rest of the squad would have seen that, then that would have kind of diffused the whole situation. Because I imagine the dressing room after that game was a bit awkward.
Yeah, because I think everybody was just sitting there thinking, what's going on? A lot of anger, obviously, because at the end of the day, we lost the game as well. So, and as you say, it's not good on the football club. It doesn't look good. It looks like there's big issues in the dressing room when you got players coming together, which there wasn't. There was no issues on the training pitch with them, nothing. So it was very strange. Where sometimes you see things building up, the players where they're clashing. But even then, it never, ever, ever spills out onto the football pitch. But you didn't even have that with them. So that was the most strangest thing. I think they've done interviews. There were never any issues. You argue with players, they get underneath you. That's just life. Well, there's never a thing where you think like that could evolve on the pitch. So, and it's another awkward situation for a manager. Like, what do you do? What do you say? At the end of the day, there's two key players playing in your team. So, very, very strange. And there were no winners in it. At the end of the day, I think them two lost out and the team lost out.
Are you basically trying to say that Lee Bowyer would have easily won that fight? Because I think that's where my money was going.
No, Souness would have had the pair on.
Yeah, I think he probably would have as well. but yeah, so obviously towards the end of that season, obviously the season ends and, you know, Newcastle do finish 14th, and obviously the cup runs obviously probably overshadowed the Premier League because they'll probably take more of a significance. But Graham's still in charge the next season. Mike Lowen comes in. More investment in the football club. What were the priorities, or what were the ambitions of the football club the next season? Was it to try and get back into the top half, try to get into Europe, or did Graham think actually this team can go places, even though a couple of players had left towards the end of that season as well?
No, I think it was get back into Europe. Obviously, finishing 14th, you're way off it, but the team shouldn't be in that position. But you are in that position at the end of the day. That's what at the end of the season, it doesn't lie the table. You've earned what you've got in that table. Give or take one or two games where you're a bit unlucky. So no, the ambition was still to go into Europe, because that was the ambition why I was even there, why I explained I moved, because their ambition was to finish high. And that didn't change. And as I say, you had Michael Owen who comes in, top striker in world football. So I think that proved where the club wanted to still go. They weren't just happy mid-table around. I don't think that was ever good enough for the people upstairs and not for the fans as well.
I read an interview with you this week, Steve. I think it was with the Chronicle, that you kind of look back on your time at Newcastle like you were a bit of a failure. I think that's very harsh on yourself, because
I don't think you were. I mean, have you seen our team at the moment? You'd walk into the right back spot now.
No, I'm not saying a complete failure. It's a failure to me to what I wanted to achieve.
Right.
So, did I deliver what I could deliver? No, I don't believe I did, and that's just being an honest assessment of myself. Yeah, I had a lot of injuries. I never felt like I got going. I got injured again, got out. That's not why I went to Newcastle. I didn't go to Newcastle to just play a bit and be injured. It doesn't matter. So that's why I look at it as a failure. There's no regret in it, because that's I wanted to do that. I mean, I never look back with regrets. No way. I enjoyed times there, but I didn't enjoy that I was injured quite a bit. Mm. And when you keep getting injured every year, I was injured for around 4 months then. It's difficult. You get going again, you're injured. So that's, yeah, I look at it. Of course, it is a failure in some ways, because if you go to a club to try to help them keep moving forward, but you're not really helping them because you haven't delivered what they've got you to do week in, week out. So that's how I look at it. It may be a bit harsh, but that's my honest assessment of it.
Mentally, how tough is that, Stephen? Because like you say, you get over the injury. I'm sure, you know, you got the rehab, you got that goal in mind to go, right, I want to be back for this game, or I want to be at least in the score for this game. And then a few games or a couple of months, you just kind of get going, and then there's another setback. Do you just have to be so positive-minded to get through that sort of situation?
Yeah, like I've had quite a few injuries in my time. I've been out for long periods of injuries as well, which is very, very difficult. Yeah, you just keep working hard, but sometimes like people look at it from the outside, I think, when people get injured a lot. I know they deal with people, but players have heard it. Well, injured players work actually harder than fit players to a certain level, because they end up going through two pre-seasons. So it becomes harder, because you're always starting again, which is quite annoying, especially when you get your season right. I think I'd done it against Middlesbrough, where I pulled my hamstring within 12 minutes or something. I felt fit, I felt brilliant, bang. You can't quantify why that happens, I don't know. It's not true not working hard enough and doing your work. I love training, so I still love training. I just think you can be unlucky with injuries. I think your body, some people get them and some people don't. But yeah, it is quite a test on your mental strength. It's something that never bothered me being injured, but it never made me weaker in the head. Like, as in getting back, it just makes you more determined. But unfortunately, you keep getting kicks. It does take its toll. It takes its toll on your body, but not your mind. If you have your mind right, it's fine. But it's your body. It's recovery again. Stop recovery again.
There was a lot of players in that squad when you were there as well that kept so kind of not injury prone, but I just kept having these niggling injuries, and we seemed to be depleted so much. And then, as you say, you work your nuts off to get back in the squad, and then you've got Jean-Alain Boumsong next to you, who that's error prone, to put it politely. I mean, like you say, that's got to be a serious test of mental strength. Did you ever have moments with kind of, because like it's no secret our defence was a bit hit and miss in the centre. Would frustration ever boil over with a couple of them lads?
Not really, to be honest, because I don't think anybody goes out there to make a mistake. They're in front of 50,000. You don't go out there to make mistakes. If some players make more mistakes than others, yeah, you still see it every day, every game you see. But there's no player goes out there not committed. So, yeah, you can have frustration, but here, a keeper will have frustration at a defender if he lets it get in, has a shot. That's just frustration. That's because you don't want to concede. You don't want to, you know, I mean, that's just normal. Like, whether it's not a personal frustration. Everybody has frustration with people making mistakes, silly mistakes, errors that can be avoided. You're outclassed by a player. It's simple. There is going to be times you're going to be outclassed. There's too many good players around. But no, I think it's frustration from everybody. Everybody's frustrated with each other, as you said, because it's a team game. Because you can just keep going back. Why is the midfield letting the players just do what they want and get through? So, but yeah, individual errors are very hard to quantify. That's up to the player, you know what I mean? And you want to make it as least amount as possible, especially as a defender.
In that second season, you experienced the time we had Derby, Newcastle versus Sunderland, and you never lost one. which is just fantastic. What was that first game like in particular at St. James's? Again, so we talked about the pressure that Graham Souness had, and there was quite a lock at this point. I think it would have been a turning point, maybe even early for Graham if he had lost that game. But it was a game that had a bit of everything. It was 2-2 at half time. We took the lead twice, and then a little Turkish magician called Emre with a fantastic free kick in the second half. What was the whole day like, if you can remember, the atmosphere, how important the game was to everybody at that point, and the result and the win after?
Yeah, derby games are the best. It doesn't matter what team it is, because every team says that they have the best derby. I always said that. And it is the best derby for every fan. It's the best derby in the world. It doesn't really matter. So, and it is like that. I played in a few of them. But unbelievable. The atmosphere, amazing. It was an amazing game. Graham's under pressure as well, which adds a bit more. You know he's under pressure as players. So it just adds a little more. They'll know he's under pressure, the Sunderland players. Because if that's me going away, it's keep a clean sheet. They're going to get restless. They're going to get on the manager. They're going to get on the team. So it does add a little bit more to it, but you have to stand up. I think the atmosphere of it takes over. And they're just amazing games to be involved in. Derby games are the best games of the season by a long way. I think a lot has gone away from it because the way the fans are segregated as well, even going into the grounds and all. It's all police, better and all. I know it's meant to be, but it does take, personally, I think it takes a lot away from it. Because I think that's part of it. I had it in the London Derby going to Highbury. Out of the pubs, they're all coming out, all the fans. That adds to the excitement of it for me. But it does be a bit different now the way it's all segregated. So, unfortunately, but it has to be.
So what you're saying is you'd like to see a few scraps on the team bus on the way in, just to get the juices flowing.
I don't mind bottles getting thrown at the bus. I think it's good. It's life. But but it is different. It's completely different. Yeah. You know what I mean? They've been taken away. And it takes a bit away from it for the build-up got from outside. But then once you're inside, it's a bit different because Newcastle, the way they have the away fans put, they actually silence them. Where a lot of grounds, you're closer to away fans more. So you're feeling that from them. You're feeling the hatred, which is brilliant. You know what I mean? I had it with Villa, Birmingham. It's quite close. You just feel it. Newcastle, you just feel the Newcastle. You can't even hear the Sunderland. You can't hear fans up the top. So it's quite clever what they do, where they put the fans, to be fair. But amazing atmosphere. As you saw, there's not many grounds like Newcastle when the team is doing well. The atmosphere is incredible. Like, that stadium does erupt. You can see the hunger in the fans and the desire. But obviously, when it's not doing well, you'll see the other side. Normal.
does like when things aren't going well, then does it affect the team on the pitch then? Because the atmosphere can turn sour and it's getting that way at the moment. So can it affect what happens on the pitch?
I think it affects individuals. I think every individual is different. For me, I don't care. It doesn't bother me one bit because at the end of the day, you get paid to play and this is what comes with it. You live a good life from it. Fans are going to be, fans work hard. Ticket prices are very expensive now. You know what I mean? They work hard all week to go and watch a game of football. They don't like the way that things are going at the club. It filters down onto the management. Then it filters the managers under pressure. It filters the tension, filters into the players if you allow it. And that depends on the individuals because at the end of the day, you still go out there to play for the club. Take away the owners, take away the manager, you're playing for the club. So for me, it doesn't bother me, but does it help? No, definitely doesn't help. It doesn't help when you have that atmosphere where it's nearly probably waiting for something to happen so then they can get on it. And instead of being in more on the front foot, it's more of a back foot one. But that's what happens when fans aren't happy, you know what I mean? It happens at every ground. Newcastle is just one of many grounds that fans won't be happy the way a club's being run or who's in charge or whatever players depict. It's part of the game.
Just briefly going back onto the derbies, there's a question that I was going to say. Obviously, you've mentioned the Second City derby. Obviously, you've played North London derbies and the Tyne Wear derby. Which one's your favourite out of the three that you've competed in?
Sorry?
Out of the three derbies that you played, the North London derby, the Second City and the Tyne Wear, which one was your favourite personally?
Oh, I'm not going to say that. Can't say that. It's different. Highbury was amazing because it was the old type ground. Very small, very tight. brilliant. I mean, like, I still think they've lost something by leaving Harvey. You know, I understand why they've done it. Even West Ham, it's the exact same. West Ham, old ground, fans are on top of you. Creates a completely different atmosphere. But the Birmingham Villa game was far, that's an old ground as well. We played them in the cup and bet them in the cup, it all kicked off. The tension in it. But I said, I think it's unfair because I think every derby's as much as big as the other. But I think when you're in the old stadiums, there's something different. There's definitely something more, as you say, the hybrid games. Why Hart Lane's an older stadium as well. The fans, you're right on the fans. Birmingham Villa is a bit bigger, Birmingham very close.
Yeah.
So I think you lose something when you haven't got them stadiums. Obviously, times change. It has to get more modern. Has to move up. But definitely, it takes away a bit from it. If you go to Derby, yeah, you have the Derby or the Emirates Stadium. I played there. But it just lacks something. It lacks, I don't know, it's just a bit more raw in them old stadiums.
Yeah, I agree. I think the way new stadiums are built nowadays, it's just, you're right, it does miss a bit of spice, shall we say, from the crowd. But away from club football, obviously, internationally, you got to play with a couple of interesting characters there as well. Like, I mean, we see Roy Keane as one of the top pundits on TV now. How is he to play with? Because I imagine things could get a bit interesting with him sometimes.
Yeah, but what Roy is, Roy's a warrior. When you're in the stadium, he will go to he'll go anywhere and defend you. He'll demand a lot from you. You need to be ready for that, especially if you're a young player. I remember being in the squad, my young player is quite a little bit daunting with him because he can be nasty, but that's what's made him what he is. I played many a game with him and I loved it. He's a leader. He doesn't take second best and he demands it. He just demands the most he can get out of you on the pitch. But will he go to war with you? Yeah. Will he back you anyway? Definitely. So for me, I always got on well with Roy. I loved his mentality towards the game. Yeah, he's the best player. He has a job for punditry for life. They must just love him because he's brilliant. He just say how it is. He doesn't care, and that's the way he is. And that's how he is as a player. He'll say it doesn't matter how big you are as a player. Regardless, it doesn't really matter to him. He's all on that pitch equal. You're all trying to get that result. So for me, I loved Roy. Roy was brilliant.
Keane or Shearer?
Different players.
Yeah, I know.
I thought we were getting an answer to that.
Silence.
I think silence is probably best sometimes. Just taking it back onto the air to Newcastle, the late Glenn Roeder took over from Graeme Souness. And what was Glenn like as a manager? Because if you look at the end of that 2005-06 season, he got the team ticking. I don't think we lost many games at all. Obviously, we beat the Sunderland 4-1 at Stadium of Light. I think it was only Manchester United and Liverpool we really lost to that I can really think of towards the back end of that season. So what was he doing differently, Stephen, to maybe what Graeme was doing? Or was it just the fact that it was just a more of a positive atmosphere around the place?
I think, as you said, late Graeme, very, very sad. He's a gentleman. You know what I mean? He's a proper gentleman, Glenn. Really cared. I don't think that there'd be a lot massive difference. He done a lot of homework on his teams, done a lot. They say there's a good atmosphere around them, but it's down to the players at the end of the day. You know what I mean? We did do well, and you can look at our managers, and you can blame our managers or whatever. Yeah, there's certain times when if you've got attacking players and they're not being allowed to show what they're about, and the manager's kind of playing them in a different way, yeah, you can then kind of look at it. But not massive things changed under Glenn to previous managers. We got results, but players performed better. But Glenn was a really nice guy, to be honest. I don't know whether that came into it as well. He cared. It's like he's proper like a father type figure. You know what I mean? That's what he is. So it is. It was very sad because I remember because I was captain as well under. I remember going into his office. Emery is a very, very gifted player. So Emery would have got more days off to go home, which I kind of had a problem with. because my attitude is, well, I'm away from home. But when I look back in it now, and I remember discussing, he says you have to deal with players differently, which I wasn't understanding enough as a manager, because as a player, and when I look back, I kind of get it. I think you do have to play with different players, but it can be quite upset the apple a little bit, I think. But if once that player is you get something that player wins games from you, well, fair enough, it's worth it. I'm sure managers do it all the time. I've been around it. And I remember having an argument with him about it. But is an argument with Glenn was an honest argument, you know what I mean? He's a good guy. There's nothing. It's just my personal opinion on it. And that's how he worked different type players. And sometimes you get the best out of players that way. We can all have our different opinions on it. But I think that goes on in management. I couldn't understand. I always think you're all in it together, you're all the same. But maybe it's not like that. Maybe you do have to play with different players differently to get the best out of them. You can bollock one player, you can't bollock the other. I've seen that, like where players will just go into themselves, or others don't care. So, yeah, it's different. But he's a gentleman, you know what I mean? So sad, very, very sad. Big loss, but yeah, he was very good. He was very enjoyable to play under.
I'd have been like you, though. I mean, Emery didn't win us anywhere near enough games to justify extra days off.
That's what I mean. I'd have been like you. But that's management. That's where management's not easy. You know what I mean? Mm. It's trying to keep every individual different individuals, different personalities, different mentality. But it's football, isn't it? Different in different places.
Yeah, I always felt a bit sad when Rhoda got the sack, and then obviously Big Sam came in with his army of sports scientists. But I seem to remember one pre-season game against Celtic. You played that day, and it was actually my first game, because being in the Midlands, none of my family liked football, so I had to wait until I could drive myself up. That was my first game, pre-season friendly against Celtic. And Big Sam brought Steve Harper on up front.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that one. As you say, it's weird. How do I answer something weird?
Because like you have all the sports scientists in the world, and then you bring a keeper on up front. It's weird. What was that? Did Big Sam have a plan about that, or did he just do it for bants? That's just weird.
I think he just done it for banter, to be honest, because Harps always liked playing outfield. Like all keepers think they're outfield players when they come to game.
Yeah.
And all they do is be clumsy and hurt people. You know what I mean? It's like, but keepers are weird, aren't they? Let's be honest. Like, to get the ball smashed at you from 5 yards and keep doing that, they are weird. Like, so I don't know. I think it must have been just banter. I think Harps must have been into him. Come on, put me on. Give us some minutes on the pitch. I forgot about that, actually. I forgot that happened. Just when you remind me now, I remember now. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, him being brought on.
Yeah, because like it wasn't a spur of the moment thing, because he had a proper outfield shirt with his name and number on the back. And I sat in the East End going, what the hell is this? I mean, I know money might be tight after the Owen signing, but Jesus.
I think he was into him, obviously, and he said, oh, I'll give him a shot up front, bring him on for a few minutes.
When you're playing behind Shay Given, I'm surprised Paddy Kenny never got a game up front for Ireland.
Yeah, but Shay's a legend. Like, it's very to shift Shay is impossible, because Shay was unbelievable at Newcastle. He was brilliant for Ireland. Like, you know what I mean? The amount of points he saved us, the amount of games he won for us was phenomenal. Top keeper.
Best keeper you played with in your career, Stephen?
Best keeper, yeah. Probably I played with. With Birmingham, I was very, very lucky. Ben Foster and Joe Hart. And the two of them were unbelievable for us. Hence, how well we've done in the seasons was because of the keepers. Yeah, we were solid as a defence. We worked hard as a unit. Great bunch of players. But they were like... But I played longer periods with Shay, with Newcastle International, so I'd have to put Shay there. But Ben and Joe were unbelievable as well. But yeah, just because the amount I played with Shay was a lot more, I'd put him there. But the other two were outstanding for us at Birmingham. Amazing.
No, Shay Given is unbelievable. I mean, I gutted when he left. If only he'd have had one more season, then he would have been the all-time appearance record holder for Newcastle, which I think he would have deserved. But with you and Shea in that squad in particular, did you have much influence on the likes of Damien Duff signing for Newcastle?
Yeah, because Tottenham wanted Damien at that time. It was Tottenham or Newcastle. We were into Duffer. I remember speaking to him quite a bit. Because I write Duffer. Duffer's an unbelievable winger. I played against him enough. Unbelievable. And there's a winger who'll just, he'll work as hard going the other way as going forward. Bags of energy. Great on the ball. So, yeah, we were quite getting into him to come because I thought he'd be brilliant for us. I think it was going to be an amazing signing for us. But luckily he did. But another one has injuries as well. He did. Very unfortunate injuries up there. And it's another one who's a top, top pro. Work as hard as any other player. Get fit. And a very fit lad. But he was unlucky as well. Very strange.
It happens. I think like I say, it's part and parcel of football, isn't it? It happens. Sometimes you just... Just some moves just don't work out for whatever reason. But just going back to maybe towards the end of your time at Newcastle, Stephen, and with Big Sam, and then obviously Kevin Keegan comes in. Who do you think was the best manager that got the best out of you at Newcastle? Was it a Glenn Rhoda or was it a Graham Souness at your time?
I think they're all similar, to be really honest. I didn't see a period of time where I thought, wow, yeah, like where I've had previous managers at Tottenham. I didn't really see it. It was all very just even, as I say, because every year I had an injury. It was all pretty even. Sam's a completely different manager, different way to say sports science, which I kind of... Maybe there's a method behind it. I kind of struggled with it a little bit. I struggled with the mentality of you have to be training at this level only for a certain period of time where I train as hard as I play in the game. That was my mentality and it's the only way to train. So it's very difficult to change that. And maybe it's right. Maybe it is a way. Maybe it does prevent you injuries-wise. But for me, that I'd feel I suffer fitness-wise in that level. I think you have to, I always believe in any training game, you have to train the way you play. I think that's an old British Irish mentality. Maybe that isn't the way, but I don't know. I don't think you can ever be fit enough. That's why I look at it.
Yeah. Was, as Johnny's North Shields Wi-Fi dips again, was coaching ever an option for you, Stephen? Because like some of the stories you've told were kind of like managers having a hard time and whatnot. So was that enough to put you off?
No, not a hard time. I think you just have to look at it now. I think there's around 300 or 400 players. I don't know what retire every year. The amount of trying to be a coach, and how many jobs is there? What level do you go in at? I've no lad who's gone in there. I know Stephen Clemens. Stephen Clemens is now obviously with Brucey. Brucey's looked after him very well, but he had to earn his stripes. And you need to be dedicated and you need to really love it. And for me, I would never have that dedication to do coaching. So you should never put yourself in the position because it is difficult. It's difficult moving up. It's difficult dealing with players. It's difficult. You have to start with younger players, which are more difficult to deal with than ever, especially the way football has evolved and changed. So I think you either love it or not. And for me, I didn't. I never done my badges. I think that told me enough that I didn't want to do it. The badges, are, as most players do, you have to just tick the box with a lot of it that you don't even agree in. So, no, it just didn't interest me. Not because of it's good at the top, but if you're in the lower levels, you're doing everything as a manager. It's tough, you know what I mean? So there's nothing glamorous about it. It's tough, tough work. And as you say, you can do well one season in the championship or something. The next season, you don't do so well. All of a sudden, you drop, you get sacked, and then A job comes up, you could have 40, 50 managers going for that job. And that's not even a top level. So, and how many people, you know what I mean, how many new coaches every year? So you only have to look at now Lampard and Gerrard. But after that, what ex-player is a manager?
Yeah,
it's a good point. Very, very good point.
Lampard is gone. He's out of a job.
Yeah.
John Terry is assistant manager of Villa. Gerrard's at Rangers doing very, very well. But after that, so that tells you the opportunities. And you can even go into the Championship with that. Because you've got experience out there. It's very difficult for an owner to say, right, we're going to give him a shot. We're going to take a chance on him. Gerrard was a massive, massive name. Lampard was a massive name. He was a massive name at Chelsea, hence why he got the job at Chelsea from Derby. But then even him, as big as he is, as much as close he was to Bramwich, still got rid of him. It's not easy. Not easy. John Terry's left. He's not got a job yet. So I think that's the way you have to quantify it. So you either love it, just staying in the game, which I think a lot of players go into because they need to stay in the game around football, feeling part of what they've been used to. So I think that's part of it as well. There's not many succeed out of all of them. You're still trying to think of a player, aren't you? I know you are.
Scott Parker.
Scott Parker. Scotty.
Former teammate.
I know. He's done well. He's going to be a very, very good manager.
Yeah, 100%. Very
good manager. Yeah, yeah. No. He's very good. You can always see it in Scott.
Just obviously, you left Newcastle and you actually announced your retirement before you actually went to Birmingham City. But did you miss it? Did you feel that you still had something left to give in football? And when you look at that Birmingham move, the League Cup in 2011, the Europa League football as well.
I retired because I couldn't get a club.
All right.
Yeah.
That's mad when you think about it. How could you not get a club? Because it wasn't like you were like 36, 37. You were still...
No, 32. I was 32. I had some hamstring problem at the end. I was fifth the last month of the season. I was just training. But I didn't get one offer. I went to West Ham on trial. I thought I'd done really well. They wanted me to go pre-season then, and I wouldn't go because I thought I'd leave myself very exposed if I got injured. No club, get injured. So I turned it down, and that was the only bit I offer type thing I got. So I didn't get any offer on the table. So you can only wait so long. I was training on my own. I didn't even do football training. I just trained on my own. And then I got an opportunity with Birmingham because my old doctor at Newcastle knew Alex McLeish, and that's the only reason I got an opportunity. I was going on holiday in January, around the Christmas, I'm sure. And he said, will you come over and go on trial for a month? I said, yeah. So I cancelled my holiday. I went on trial. Then, bear in mind, I had no football fitness. I was there for 8 months. So I had to build it up again, doing a pre-season. He extended it to the end of the season. If we went up, then there'd be a contract for me. And that's how that just all happened. I retired because I was forced to retirement because you can't wait over a year. It's impossible. You can't get back in playing football. Your body will have changed so much. It's a completely different training to what I was doing. So, yeah, I end up signing. We end up going up in the last game of the season away. And I signed a contract. And it turned out to be unbelievable for me. Yeah. From nothing. So, I was very lucky. The old doc at Newcastle was very close to Alex McLeish. That's the only reason.
Funny how these things work out. But like Birmingham, yeah, but that's where you... Yeah, yeah. Birmingham would have been where you would have played with Stephen Clements then, wouldn't it? And then...
Yeah, where Clem was near the end, yeah. Clem was going then.
Was he always... Did you know if he always had his eye on coaching? Is he a good bloke? And
he did have...
He's first team coach now at Newcastle, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, no. Clem's a really, really good lad. I was at Tottenham. He was my roomie at Tottenham for a good few years. So I grew up with Clem. Clem was a year younger than me, but we were always in the squads together. So he'd be a roomie for years. So I was quite close with Clem. He's a very good friend. But he was doing his badges at Birmingham when I used to go up. He was doing all his stuff. Remember doing sessions. We were talking about different sessions. So he'd probably want to be a manager. He's a really, really good lad. Really good lad. I'm sure he's a good coach. I've never seen him coach. I'm sure he is. He's gone with Brucey. I know Clem very well. So, he always wanted to go into coaching after.
And another Birmingham player who, former Newcastle player, I wonder what this player was like. Obafemi Martins scoring the winner for Birmingham at Wembley against Arsenal.
That's all he did.
League Cup.
That's all he did.
He was horrendous, wasn't he? He was horrendous.
what was he like at Newcastle, though, as well?
Yeah, but Obi had everything to cause the problem. It's just whether you got it that day, you just didn't know. Because his pace was electrifying. He was strong as an ox for such a small lad. But he'd win a game or he'd be poor. Like you just did not know what you're going to get on that day. But he could be so dangerous for you. But he's just in and out. He's that type in and out type player. But what a handful, like, on his day. Massive handful. But he's a really good lad. Good to be around. Nice lad and all good. But you just didn't know what was going to happen with him. He wasn't a Shearer finisher. If he was a great, great finisher, God, because he could get himself in any position with his pace and power. But he just didn't have that, like a Michael Owen Shearer, where he'd slot it very rare. Like, so. But then he just put one in the top corner from nowhere. No backlift, bang. So he just surprised you. I think he's always done that everywhere he's been. He just could be surprised. I had him at Birmingham, but he didn't play much at Birmingham. Came on loan. He didn't do much. But then he's remembered for scoring the cup final goal. It's amazing how football works. That's all people talk about.
Yeah. I remember away at Spurs when we won 3-2, he scored an absolute rocket. And he was absolutely anonymous. He was shite before that went in. But then, like, as you say, he scores the winner for you in the League Cup final. Was that the best day of your footballing career?
It was I'd won it with Tottenham, but I was younger. And then I think the circumstances around me going to Birmingham, being the captain, the first trophy, now, I think it has to be because it's just the whole. At Tottenham, you were expected to do something at that time. You're always expected to win something. At Birmingham, it's a completely different thing. I was playing against Arsenal as well, which added a bit more for me. Everybody would write us off. So everything was stacked against you. And the journey for me to get to that final, I'd never have seen it. Because as you say, I couldn't get a club. So it has to be one of my best day, because everything about it was just perfect. I say beating Arsenal as well, and then bringing it home to Birmingham, and the fans who were, as you say, it's like Newcastle fans just waiting for that trophy, and especially Birmingham at that stage, they're not investing. You know what I mean? The club's a bit of a mess. They never expected to have that, so that's what added a little bit more.
Just moving on to current day Newcastle United stuff, Stephen. Obviously, very early into this season, Newcastle are on 1 point out of the first three games of the season, already at the Carabao Cup as well. And there's a lot of pressure on Steve Bruce at the minute. What do you make of Newcastle today and right now? And do you think it's going to be a tough season for them?
Well, yeah, I watched the Newcastle against West Ham game, which was an unbelievable game. Like, and I don't watch many games because I think a lot of games don't have that excitement as much. But that was an unbelievable game. The problem for Newcastle at the moment is you have an ownership that wants to sell. So it hangs over everything, because then the fans are disgruntled to get rid, just want a new beginning. And that all filters down. Bruce ideally would not want to start the season 1-3 because he knows what's happening with that. That's just adding, the pressure's getting bigger. Going out of the cup straight away, bigger. So it's going to be a difficult season. And I think, like, at the end of it, you could see going forward, they have got players. But the problem is when that pressure is so big and mounts, it's as I said before, it's like you're waiting on that mistake. The fans are on the negative at the moment because the whole situation with the club, it's been dwindling on for a long time now with Mike Ashley. He openly wants to sell the club. It hasn't been sold. They're expected big people to come in who would spend money. So they're getting excited now. That's all dropped again. So it's just a little bit in limbo. I think it's a limbo club at the moment, the way it is, which doesn't help the team at all. They haven't bought many players in the window, which the fans now are angry about as well. So it's just everything. There's nothing positive coming into the fans' minds. So they'll bring that into the stadium with them. The players know. Bruce knows he's under pressure. So it depends now. They just need to nick a result or two, just get a bit of positiveness back in. But it's going to be tough for them. It will be a tough season.
Yeah, our next game's at Old Trafford with Ronaldo's second debut, so can't wait for that. That's going to be great, great fun. To kind of come full circle, You're in Spain. You didn't do your coaching badges. So how does a former international right back end up with his own fashion line, which isn't horrendous like Grealish and Madison have got with Boohoo?
The young are different. Well, to be fair, I'm in Spain. I'm part of restaurant business as well. And that's what brought me. That's why it's good to get here. And I tried to learn about business behind the scenes there. I worked in it for a few years with staff and then all. It happens because I have a very good friend here who used to be in that industry. So I think it happened. I think COVID kind of made it happen, to be really honest, because I think people are, how they dress is a bit different. I live in gym gear, I live in casual gear, I don't wear anything else. And it's, so I think people are working from home a lot, and I think it's just easiness. So the clothing range is, yeah, as you say, it's not flashy, you know, it's just, it's more casual, better quality. And that's how it became. So let's see, it's going well already at the moment, so it'll be out there more. It's tough. It's like, you know, I mean, there's a massive amount in the industry because a lot of people have gone into it. So it's tough competition, but it depends what you deliver. It's for all ages, but as you say, it's not for the likes of the Grealishes and all that. I don't think it's too plain for them guys. But yeah, that's how I got into it, from a good friend here. We had a chat, so we said we'd give it a shot. Why not?
Why not? Exactly. Why not? Link for Stephen's clothing line will be in the description, and you can see it on the ticker as well, at the bottom of your screen as well. So make sure you check out that as well. But Stephen, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about all things Newcastle United and getting your views on what it was like back in the day and obviously the current day as well. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, lads. Thanks very much. Cheers for your time.
Stephen, I was going to say Stephen there, Sam, sorry. Where can everybody listen to this podcast?
Every podcast app. I've got my eye on one of Stephen's hoodies as well. Hopefully they do it in fat bastard sizes, so it'll fit me as well. But a new episode every Tuesday, and all the links to the previous episodes, including the likes of Nobby Solano and Alan Shearer and all them legends, are all in the description as well.
Fantastic. So for myself, okay. Jonathan Greenman, Sam Milner, and the former Newcastle United fullback, Stephen Carr, we'll see you all very, very soon.